listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
There has been a culture in Washington.
Tony Hayward has done a great job for the
The school counseling faculty has decided that my views are not acceptable.
Bull crap.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. This is a show where truth is our bitch and we will go just about anywhere. I say just about anywhere to reveal it to you. We'll take you through the looking glass. We'll take you to the other side of this thing called talk radio. Coming up, Tony Hayward says he was demonized over the oil slick Jack Tatum has died, the former defensive back of the Oakland Raiders, age of 61. Bobby Dooley will be on in just a moment to talk with us about that. Plus, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights says ladies' night at bars is a discriminatory celebration of sorts. That's right, ladies' night at bars. That's the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. Now, before we get all excited, it's not a court. It's not a federal agency. It's the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. So that could very well mean absolutely nothing. We'll look into it, though, for you, before you start flipping out. You know, I'm not going to have my ladies' night. I'm not going to have my specials. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. What are you looking at, bud?
What do you mean special?
The special drink prices.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
877-876-PHIL. Washington, D.C. is in our affiliate spotlight tonight, and that is WTNT 570 AM is where we're heard in the D.C. area. And in Burley, Idaho, KBAR 1230 AM, both stations, great stations on the Phil Hendry Radio Network. We also have, of course, our website, philhendryshow.com, which is the interactive new media adjunct to our radio show. You go to philhendryshow.com. You can watch live streaming video of our show right now and listen to a live audio stream as well. PhilHendryShow.com. You can listen to our archives that are over there. We have a five-day video archive. You can download not only every day's show, you can download stuff from our archives. And starting next week, of course, we begin our podcasts, both podcasts of our archive material and podcasts of our new show at iTunes. And that is for backstage pass holders. So get over to the website, get a BSP, and get on board for those podcasts. 877-876-PHIL. And as we mentioned, the great defensive back of the Oakland Raiders, Jack Tatum, has died. Now, one of the reasons why we're probably focusing a little more on the passing of this particular football player than on another particular football player, for that matter, is because Jack Tatum was a controversial figure, and he played pro football at a time when it was coming into its own on Monday Night Football. It was getting even more popular than it was in the 60s, and it was pretty damn popular. Jack Tatum was also involved in a number of incidents on field. He was a hard-hitting, hard-sticking defensive back. The incident that most people know is the August 12th, 1978 preseason game in which he hit Darryl Stingley, a wide receiver, with his helmet in the back. And Darryl Stingley wound up suffering a severed fourth and fifth vertebrae, and he was paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of his life. Bobby Dooley joining us from the Western States Homeowners Association. Good evening, Bobby.
Well, good evening, Phil.
And, you know, you are a Homeowners Association president. You're a PTO president. You have three sons and a husband. You have fashion shows. And you're a football fan.
Well, I am. I've been a football fan since probably I was 9 or 10. My father was a very big fan, and that was how we spent our Sundays. And my father was a very big Oakland Raiders fan. Even though I grew up in Southern California, he enjoyed watching the Oakland Raiders because my dad was from the Bay Area originally. And so we did spend a lot of time watching football.
And in particular, the Raiders?
In particular, the Oakland Raiders, that's right.
So when you hear about Jack Tatum passing, tell me your thoughts, your feelings, your memories of Jack Tatum.
Well, the first thing that I think of, Phil, when I think about Jack Tatum is that he was made into a villain.
You don't think he deserved that?
No, I do not think he deserved it at all. Jack Tatum was a great football player. He played very hard. Jack Tatum tackled very ferociously. He hit people very hard. He was very proud and should be very proud of the fact that wide receivers were afraid of him, and so they could not concentrate.
And what of this incident? I think we should bring this up, even though it is the occasion of the man's passing, and so we do want to be respectful, you know.
Well, I think, Phil, that that's the most important thing. People love to bring up the Daryl Stingley hit. I'm happy to talk about it, but I think it is not respectful of a man who has just passed on, who meant so much to the Oakland Raiders football team, to talk of him in a negative term, a negative way like that.
Well, he did leave a man paralyzed, Bobby. And before you respond, he hit Daryl Stingley in that preseason game and left this man paralyzed from the neck down. Now, my understanding, and maybe you have more information, my understanding is that Daryl Stingley and Jack Tatum never spoke, and Jack Tatum never apologized.
Well, no, that's not entirely true. Jack Tatum wanted to speak to Daryl Stingley, but he was kept from speaking to Daryl Stingley by Daryl Stingley's family. Now, let me explain what happened in August of 78 and the kind of football player that Jack Tatum was. Jack Tatum, like many great players, did not view exhibition games as an exercise in going at half speed. Jack Tatum played every down of football, whether it was in the regular season or whether it was in the preseason, very hard. Joe Namath was the same way. There's a lot of players. And so Daryl Stingley, whether he was going through the motions, I don't know. Whether Daryl Stingley was not concentrating, I don't know. Or whether Daryl Stingley just did not run a very good pass route on that particular play, I don't know the answer still, but I do know that all Jack Tatum did was hit Daryl Stingley the way a football player is supposed to hit another. And I would also like to say he was not flagged for a foul.
Oh, he was not? On that play?
No, he was not. There was no penalty. It was a clean hit. It was a hard hit. And I think a lot of football players who think that, oh, it's a preseason game, I think I'll go out there and just go at half speed. And that's not what happened. And Daryl Stingley was probably, I don't know, you know, wondering about, you know, what he was going to have for dinner that night, or where he parked his Mercedes or something.
Well, let's hold on for a minute. Let's not talk ill of Daryl. Daryl Stingley is no longer with us either, all right? I don't want to be characterizing that man.
Well, I don't know. But, I mean, why Daryl Stingley all of a sudden is paralyzed and all these other players absorbed similar hits from Jack Tatum and are not paralyzed?
Well, let's not say, though, that Daryl Stingley was in the back, you know, it was going out on a pass pattern and it was thinking about his Mercedes.
Well, I'd like to know what he was thinking about, but I guess we'll never know.
Well, maybe he was concentrating on the ball. And, you know, a lot of wide receivers will say that they want to stay as relaxed as they can while they're looking for that football. They don't want to tense up, because if they're tense, then they're not going to get as much elevation. Maybe he was relaxed, looking for the ball, trying to get his hands on the ball.
Well, whatever the case may be, Daryl Stingley, I think, could have spoken up and, you know, defended Jack Tatum and said, you know what, I mean, Jack Tatum hit me, and I could have been playing much better, and I was not concentrating, and
but we don't know that that's the case, do we?
We don't, because Daryl Stingley never said anything.
And but we never heard Jack Tatum say, I'm sorry. We never heard any public statement.
Well, Jack Tatum wrote three books, Phil. They Call Me Assassin was the first one. And in that book, he did not apologize, but he was very affected by what happened to Daryl Stingley.
And well, how can you be really affected by what happened to Daryl Stingley and not apologize?
Because I think he knew the business that he was in. He was in the business of professional football, and the people in the seats and the owners and the advertisers, they want to see the Gladiator take to the field. And in the case of a Jack Tatum, who is a very ferocious-looking man, yes, he was black. You know, the idea of this black and silver, black, everything about Tatum, if you look at him in the uniform, it's all very black, you know. you can't even see this. The inside the helmet, it's black.
And because he was a black man, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a black jersey, and I think that that people wanted to see that kind of hitting, and they want to see that kind of sticking. And that's what Jack Tatum gave them.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Talking to Bobby Dooley about Jack Tatum, are you and the passing of Jack Tatum, and in 1978, a hit on Daryl Stingley of the New England Patriots put Daryl Stingley in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. Are you aware of the fact, Bobby, that Chuck Knoll of the Steelers said that this was a criminal element, that Jack Tatum and George Atkinson, those two backs in particular, those two safeties for the Raiders, were a part of a criminal element in the National Football League?
I think that Chuck Knoll should never have said that, because I think that showed that he was afraid of the Raiders, that his players were afraid of the Raiders, and that that the Raiders were getting to them. And I think that Chuck Knoll saying that, I think that the New England Patriots reacting the way they did, all they did was let everyone know how afraid of the Raiders they were, and how afraid of Jack Tatum they were, and how much the Raiders, and how hard they hit. And it's often been said that you really can't, one professional cannot intimidate another in football.
I've heard that said, yeah.
Well, I think in the case of the Raiders, that is true. I think the Raiders did intimidate people with their physical ability, and in the case of a Jack Tatum, more so. And I just find it really interesting that people, I had an argument with the wife of one of our board members. I said to her, you really don't know anything about football. This is a woman.
This was one of your female friends?
Yeah. And she said, well, I want to learn about it. And I said, why? She said, because I don't know who you think you are, or something like that. A lot of these gals don't like me knowing as much as I do about football, because I'm very fit, I do a lot of working out, I look good, and I also know a lot about football. And so men tend to, talk to me. But this lady was saying to me, the Raiders are mean, or some ridiculous thing. I said, you know what, you don't embarrass yourself. You don't even know what you're talking about.
And this was a woman who was trying to talk football with you?
Yes, another woman. I said to her, I grew up with football. I know all about it. And I told her to get away from me, because she was angering me. But I did tell her, Jack Tatum played football the way you're supposed to play football. And if people get crippled, Phil, then I would suggest to them that they shouldn't have been in football in the first place.
Wow. All right, Bobby. Well, I did ask you on to talk about Jack Tatum. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Bobby and Steve Dooley here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show about Jack Tatum, the career of the Oakland Raider defensive back who is best known. He passed on, by the way, today at the age of 61. He's best known for a hit on Daryl Stingley, wide receiver with the New England Patriots in 1978, that put Daryl Stingley in a wheelchair for life. And, Bobby, you're saying that that's football, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you can't, people are going to... Jack Tatum was a great ball player. And if you're going to cry about people going into wheelchairs, you know what? You better go and get your jacks or your roller skates or something.
All right, we're talking with Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk to Bobby, a mother of three boys and a wife, and she's involved in all kinds of things, and she's a Raider fan, about Jack Tatum. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You already said that.
Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, a world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL. We got Bobby Dooley on the line with us. She is the president of the Western Estates Homeowners Association, president of the Western Estate Parent Teachers Organization. You have fashion shows, and you're a football fan, and you were, in particular, an Oakland Raider fan.
Well, Phil, I was a big Raider fan during the Jack Tatum days. When they came to Los Angeles, we didn't follow them as closely. My kids are big Raider fans, but I do remember the Raiders when I was younger, and I thought that that Oakland Raider team was very exemplary, I think, of what people think of when they think of the Raiders.
All right, Jack Tatum died, and I want to get the story straight here. Jack Tatum, the Pro Bowl safety for the Oakland Raiders, best known for his crushing hit that paralyzed Daryl Stingley in the NFL preseason in 1978, has died. He was 61. He wrote the book The Assassin. Died of a heart attack Tuesday in an Oakland hospital, according to a friend and former Ohio State teammate John Hicks, on August the 12th, 1978, in a preseason game against the New England Patriots. The hard-hitting Tatum slammed into Stingley with his helmet while the receiver was running a pass pattern.
And Phil, that is such a ridiculous line. Slammed into Stingley with his helmet. That's what you tackle people with.
Well, no, not really. I mean, there's a penalty against spearing, don't you? You hit him with a shoulder pad.
You hit him with a combination of the pad and the helmet. But you use what you can, and I will tell you something. Again, he was not penalized for that hit. Paralysis, and this is very difficult for me to say, but football players that are carried off the field on a stretcher, football fans, for some reason, find that exciting. I'm not saying that I do, but that is part of the drama of the game. Dennis Byrd, Reggie Brown, Mike Utley, these are all players, Phil, that suffered either partial or permanent paralysis of one kind or another. It is part of the drama of the game. What Jack Tatum did was play football, and Daryl Stingley was not playing his best football, and so he was hurt. And I'm so grateful to be able to talk to a man about this, because my world is filled with women and...
Well, yeah, but you may be talking to a man, but I'm not necessarily understanding what you're saying. If you're saying to me that paralysis, you know, is a wonderful thing...
No, I'm not saying that paralysis is a wonderful thing. I'm saying that it is part of the excitement of the game to see that. Most people who enjoy football don't play football and have never played football. So you have to understand what their sensibilities are.
Most people that watch football have never played football.
That is correct.
So what are those sensibilities?
Their sensibilities are that they do like to see people get hit badly to the point where they're in a stretcher or on a gurney. Now, I understand football better than most people because my father was a very big fan and he just taught us a lot about the game. Most people don't really know anything about it, and so they do like to see paralysis. My point is, if you got a player in the game that is not smart enough to know how to play against a Jack Tatum, he's going to get paralyzed. It's going to add to the excitement of the fans.
Fans don't necessarily want to see a guy get paralyzed. They want to see him get hit.
Well, they do like to see, though, the man laying there motionless. It is hard to understand. I agree.
You're telling me that football fans like to see a guy laying there, not moving.
Did you ever play football, Phil?
In high school.
All right, well, then you don't, you're not who I'm talking. I'm talking about people that have met most of the men that like football, for instance, have never really played it. They've played touch football or something like that. So when they see a guy laying there motionless, you hear them in the sports bar. All right, where does a Jack Tatum...
When they see a guy laying there motionless, you hear him in a sports bar. If you see a guy laying there motionless, that's a very serious thing. He could be injured, okay? He could be paralyzed.
Right, but the football fan likes that drama. Jack Tatum, Phil, I think, gave them that and more. And George Atkinson gave them that and more. And that's what I try to explain to people when I talk to them about football, whether it is a man or a woman. And there are a lot of men that don't know anything about the game, so I have to, in my own way, explain it to them. And there's a lot of women, too. But that's what Jack Tatum brought to the game. And if you were not strong enough and you were not good enough, then you get out of Jack Tatum's way or you're paralyzed for life. And that means for life. I'm a woman. I understand that about football. Most women don't.
All right, we'll be back with Bobby and Steve Dooley about the legacy of Jack Tatum. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, and with me is Bobby Dooley of the Western Estates Homeowners Association and the Western Estates Parent Teacher Organization. But we're talking about football, and we're talking about Jack Tatum.
And Phil, can I interrupt for a moment?
Go ahead.
Because I'm a woman, it doesn't mean that I don't know about football.
No, I understand, and I'm sorry. I didn't mean it to sound like you're... It is unusual. It is unusual, though, to talk to a woman who knows as much as you do.
Well, that I understand.
And to that end, I was going to ask you, when you get together with your husband, you still watch football with your husband and the kids?
Well, that's just it. I don't do as much as I used to, but I still know a lot about the game. And I do. I'll talk to Steve. I'll talk to friends of his that are over, or sometimes I'll talk to the some of the wives that are over. And it's an interesting dynamic. As a woman, if I show an inordinate amount of knowledge about football, the men will at first find it charming, but then they'll start to argue because it's a little difficult for them to comprehend that a woman knows about football. The women, on the other hand, resent me. They resent me something terrible because I am, as I said, I work out. I've got a nice figure. I dress well. And I'm still young enough to make a lot of them look, I guess, older than their years. And I know about football. So what I present, I think, is a whole package to some men. And to that extent, a lot of women resent it, yeah.
Oh, do they resent it to what point? They don't want to be your friend? Do they argue with you?
Well, they'll try to say, oh, I know about that play. That was a great pass. Or they sound ridiculous, and a lot of times I understand why it is men get impatient with women because a lot of my girlfriends will say, oh, I liked that pass. They'll say something very...
something that you wouldn't hear a football fan say, right?
Exactly, and I'll have to say to them, you really sounded ridiculous. You're going to sound really ridiculous if a real football fan hears you, And Janice really said, well, my husband, he's a fan. I said, no, he's not. No, he's not. Janice is a friend of mine, and her husband is, he's ridiculous. He doesn't know anything about the game, really.
All right, we're going to get to some phone calls here, Bobby, and talk about Jack Tatum. We've heard your take on Jack Tatum, a great player, a guy, in your opinion, who was a hard-hitting ball player, but not overboard. A guy who, was responsible for the hit on Daryl Stingley that eventually put him in a wheelchair. But you say that paralysis is something that football fans expect to see. But you're differentiating between fans and fans who played the game.
Well, fans who played the game, I don't know. But fans want, just like NASCAR fans want to see, eventually they want to see a car involved in a fatality of some kind.
Well, they want to see a wreck,
Well, yeah, they do. But NASCAR fans really want to see a fatality. That is, they want to see a car so destroyed that there is no chance that anyone survived it. And to that end, I think football fans are the same. They want to see that stretcher. They want to see that neck brace. They want that trauma.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call in Redding, California, listening on KCNR. Fernando, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show, sir.
Hey, I want to comment. I'm a big football fan, and I do like to see hard hitting. You appreciate the game, but I can't agree with the fact that most fans want to see somebody at the end of the bunk, or in the midst of playing football, seeing somebody that injured or that severely hurt, they're carried off the field. I don't agree with that. I don't think most football fans.
I think that reflects negatively on the defensive player. As I said to Mr. Hendry, that means therefore that Jack Tatum played his career in vain, and I just don't accept that. I think if we accept a Jack Tatum, then we welcome an injury. We welcome a spinal injury.
We don't welcome a spinal injury. Why would we do that?
Well, I'm glad both of you. We do welcome a spinal injury because we know that that is a Jack Tatum out there playing on defense. And I hope that helps you, sir.
I think you're in a very small minority of people that think that way.
Then you don't like the kind of hard hitting that a Jack Tatum brought to professional football.
That's not true. Because I try to play at a higher level in high school.
Either you like it or you don't.
Hold on for a minute. The gentleman's trying to explain. What do you mean? In other words, if I like Jack Tatum, then I got to look forward to spinal injuries?
I think to say that you like a Jack Tatum, but you don't want to see spinal injuries, is like saying, I love to see the sunshine. I hope it isn't warm today. I don't understand. But I hope I help the gentleman understand.
All right, Fernando, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Solomon in Greensboro, North Carolina. Solomon, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yes. The way the lady's talking, you see defensive players now, if he was a two-way player and stood a chance of getting hit like that himself, the object is to stop a player and not hurt him and not injure him. Injuring a player.
Well, hold on for a minute, Bobby. I can't hear you. I'm trying to listen to the gentleman.
I'm listening to him, too.
I know, but I can't hear him. Go ahead, Solomon.
Yeah. The object of the defense is to stop an offensive player, not to injure him. And sometimes doing it in the course of that, they get injured. We don't cheer that or like to see it or say that's part of his game.
The object, Jack Tatum, I think, brought to the game that idea that you want to stop him, but you also want him thinking about you on the next play. So that when a Jack Tatum puts his helmet into you, you think about that going back to the huddle, and you think about it when you're going out on another pass route, and you may not be as effective. So I think what Jack Tatum brought to the game was that dimension.
All right, but that still doesn't say that Jack Tatum... true enough, Bobby, but that still doesn't say that Jack Tatum was necessarily looking to hurt people.
Well, you have to hurt someone in order to get them to fear you. And so I think Jack Tatum hurt the opposing wide receivers when he could.
That was the argument. That was the argument against platoon football, that the defensive players, now he goes back to the bench. He's not going to get hit like that.
I understand that. But that was in the 30s. They didn't wear helmets. What I'm saying basically is that Jack Tatum is the kind of football player that when he plays well, people are going to wind up in wheelchairs. I don't think there's any doubt. That doesn't mean that he enjoys it. I'm saying that when Jack Tatum played the game well, and we love to watch Jack Tatum play, people wound up in iron lungs.
Mm-hmm. And people wound up in iron lungs.
Yeah.
I don't understand how
you could say that Jack Tatum was a great player, but on the other hand, I don't like the end result of him hitting people.
People played the game as well as Jack Tatum was as great as was and would stop the opposition as well as he did without... the point of attack was to hurt the person instead of stopping them.
Right.
That's the game.
Well, I think what Jack did is it got them thinking not only about the tackle, but it got them thinking about their future, about
Jack was wrong.
How much insurance were they carrying. Did they really want to stay in this business?
Solomon, thank you, sir, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. You're talking about Jack Tatum... when he played the game well, people wound up in iron lungs. Now, that was your quote.
But the point that I'm making...
No, that was your quote, though. That when Jack Tatum played the game well, people wound up in a wheelchair, they wound up in iron lungs, all right? And then you said that he didn't necessarily enjoy it, and that's what the gentleman was asking. So what are you saying?
I'm saying that Jack Tatum knew what put, as my husband Steve says, what
the fannies in the seats.
What puts fannies in the seats? What puts the fannies in the seats of the National Football League? It is a guy like a Jack Tatum who, when he takes the football field, you know that the Special Olympics for someone is not very far behind. And I know.
Oh, my God. That's about the most heartless thing that I could possibly imagine anyone say. The Special Olympics are not far behind.
No, I don't mean...
You're not talking about anybody being mentally retarded.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about people who are walking on the double crutches.
Yeah, in other words, paralysis.
No, not necessarily full.
We're not
talking quad.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're not talking quad. Then what are we talking? It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're talking with Bobby and Steve Dooley here about Jack Tatum, who passed on at the age of 61 from a heart attack. He was a defensive back for the Oakland Raiders. He was described at one point by Chuck Knoll of the Pittsburgh Steelers as part of a criminal element in professional football. Because of a hit on Daryl Stingley, a wide receiver for the New England Patriots, put Daryl Stingley in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. Daryl Stingley was paralyzed from the neck down. And was known as a hard-hitting football player. They Call Me Assassin was the name of his book. And, Bobby, you made a point about that Fuqua hit in the Immaculate Reception, right?
Yes. The fact is, Phil, that if Jack Tatum had hit Frenchie Fuqua harder, he would have... There never would have been an Immaculate Reception. The Pittsburgh Steelers never would have won 4 Super Bowls. And we would not really know the names of Terry Bradshaw and Frank O'Hara. If Jack Tatum had really laid into John Fuqua, the tight end for the Steelers, the way he should have, Fuqua would not have gotten up. The football would have not have caromed a mile in the air. It would have just fluttered to the earth. Fuqua might have wound up in a wheelchair. He might have wound up in ICU. He might have wound up, I don't know, you know, Steve and I talk sometimes... These poor men you see that are bald with a scar running up the back of their skull, that might have been John Fuqua. But by God, the Steelers never would have won 4 Super Bowls.
Well, that seems like one hell of a trade-off, I can tell you that.
Well, it might be one hell of a trade-off, but by God, you wouldn't have seen Terry Bradshaw every week there on NFL Reports on Fox. And all of the other things we've had to suffer for year in and year out, if Jack Tatum had put a hit on John Fuqua the way he knew he could, which would have left John Fuqua pedaling a bicycle and delivering flowers. I'm sorry, Phil.
That's about as cold a shot. You know.
I'm sorry, but I've got to say it. John Fuqua, if he'd been hit properly, would be pedaling a bicycle delivering flowers.
With a ski cap.
Wearing a ski cap, yeah.
877-876-PHIL, Bobby and Steve Dooley talking about Jack Tatum on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget, later on, we got coming up Jeff Dowder.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Jack Tatum of the Oakland Raiders. He played at a time when the Raiders' mystique was probably still very potent. I think in recent years, the idea that everybody's a badass on the football field has pretty much taken off. In recent years, we've had everybody, you know, from hockey teams to basketball teams to rollerblade teams. Everyone's got some rep for being a badass. But back in the day, when football, baseball, basketball, all of those sports were still played by All-Americans, played by athletes, played by guys that went to bed early and, you know, and got up early, played by guys who adhered to these old maxim about you can't have sex before you, you know, compete in athletics and all of that. Along came the Oakland Raiders, who drafted players regardless of a personal reputation the player might have. I was often said, Bobby, that Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley are with me. Bobby, with the Homeowners Association of Western Estates, and a woman who knows her football. I heard it said that the Raiders always drafted from USC, Notre Dame, Ohio State, places like that, because Al Davis wanted players that were used to winning.
That's true, and that's where Jack Tatum was from. He played for what he hates at Ohio State. And so Jack Tatum was a player that was used to winning. And Bob Chandler was from USC, and so many players that played for the Raiders were former Notre Dame players. John Matuszak played at Notre Dame. And Al Davis wanted players that were used to winning. He wanted players that were used to winning championships. He wanted players that would get angry if they didn't win. And in the case of a Jack Tatum, he did what he had to do to win football games. And if that meant that he left someone bloody, if it meant that he put a man in a wheelchair and never apologized for it.
Well, you know, Jack Tatum, I heard, wanted to get together with Daryl Stingley, but it never happened because of Stingley's family.
That's what I heard, too, yeah.
And so, but he never did apologize.
Well, Daryl Stingley said it didn't matter to him that he'd forgiven Jack and that he recognized that Jack Tatum would want to, whatever he was going to say to Daryl Stingley, he would say to him face to face. But beyond that, Jack Tatum didn't apologize because he didn't have to. That's just the way football should be played.
When you're talking with friends and you're talking with family and you're talking to, say, other women, and you talk to them about your philosophy of football, which is basically people like to see those hard hits, and if somebody goes off with a neck brace on, a possible paralysis, fans like that. What do they say?
A lot of the women try to act as if they're real hardcore fans, too, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I know that. And I'll look at them and I'll just look them up and down and I'll say, you know what, you're not even close to understanding what... I make sure that I let the girls know that I'm the woman that knows about football. And if they're going to pretend like they can, you know, they can keep up with my game, then I have to. The men, on the other hand, can be intimidated because I know more about football than most men that I talk to, especially about the Raiders and a lot of the stuff we're talking about right now.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number here. Jack Tatum, dead at the age of 61. We're talking with Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley from Western Estates. Here is John in Cincinnati. Go ahead, John. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
I don't think any true football fan wants to see anybody hurt one way or the other. I think it's insanity to see that.
Based
you want to see hard-hitting football.
Based on what experience?
On what experience watching football? Yeah. I'm 70 years old. I think that nobody, like in Cincinnati, they had Carson Palmer got hit by a guy from Pittsburgh. And Cincinnati fans complained that Carson Palmer, it was done on purpose. I think things happen, people get hit hard, but I don't think any football player or any football fan really wants to hurt somebody else. I think that's totally insanity for anybody to feel that way or say that, to see they want to see somebody lay on the field hurt.
You know, as a Cincinnati Bengal fan, you know that you want to see Steelers get hurt.
No, I don't.
No.
I don't want to see anybody get hurt. I want to see good, strong football. I like to see hard hitting.
What is good,
I like to see the
football
game played well, the technique played well, but nobody get hurt.
And what is hard hitting? If you like to see hard hitting, and then you say you don't want to see people get hurt, that's mutually exclusive.
No, you can see technique and hard hitting and not get hurt.
We're
paralyzed. I think the thing you want to, you're going to go out to see somebody get paralyzed, you have to be nuts.
If you see a good hit, if you see a hit that is textbook put on a receiver by a defensive back, you're going to see an iron lung at some point.
Not necessarily. It does happen because the body can only...
Not necessarily. Well, let me ask you, Bobby. Bobby, you say that good football, textbook football, like what John is talking about, means iron lung. What is it with you and iron lungs?
I'm trying to get this into people's heads that good football often results in paralysis. And that doesn't mean that the man that made the hit is a bad man. In the case of a Jack Tatum, he's a very good football player. He made wide receivers remember him. And he put one in a wheelchair. Is that bad football or good football, John?
By him putting one in a wheelchair, I don't think he necessarily. I don't think he meant to put anybody in a wheelchair.
No, I didn't.
I don't think he necessarily wanted to hurt that person.
Is
that
good
football to put somebody in a wheelchair? It's sometimes that things happen, but I don't think it should be intentional, and I don't think any fan should say, "I want to see somebody in a wheelchair." Give me a break.
I love
people,
it. I love it.
You have the mentality of the people who drive down the street, see an accident, and stop and stare and hoping that something goofy will happen. That's a sick mentality. You need to talk to a psychiatrist.
I love it. I love it, and I love it so.
Well, to see somebody put an iron lung means you need to talk to somebody. You've got a mental problem.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you a question. Jack Tatum, good football, bad football?
He's a good football player, no question about it.
Okay.
But to see then
Daryl Stingley being in a wheelchair is good.
No, it's not good.
Yes, he said it was good. You said Daryl Stingley in a wheelchair is good.
No, he did not say it was good.
Phil
Henry Show.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
What's not fair is what's happened on the Gulf. What's not fair is the actions of some have caused the greatest environmental...
That they didn't bother to communicate to the passengers, hey, this is what's going on, this is what we're trying to do.
Well, I'm concerned about the disclosure of sensitive...
The school counseling faculty has decided that my views are not...
Cuckoo. Your views are what? Your views are cuckoo. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Views Talk and Entertainment Show that knows what it's talking about. And we've got this hour Dean Wheeler joining us to discuss Oliver Stone's controversial comments about Jews in the media. Did you hear this one? Oliver Stone, he's a controversial guy, and he said, he essentially repeated what we've heard a lot of people say, that Jews control the media, that Hitler was a scapegoat. Unreal stuff that I am told today he attempted to apologize for. Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center is going to be with us. He is a Oliver Stone aficionado. And we'll try to speak on behalf of the director and give us some insight into what it was he might have been talking about. Also coming up, a morbidly obese rapist says that he confessed to crimes because he was offered junk food. So he was a fat ass, and he was coerced into confessing his crimes because someone offered him a Twinkie or something. That's what he wants us to believe. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our website is philhenryshow.com. This is the new media interactive part of our radio show. If you want to watch the show as well as listen to it, you can watch live streaming video right now, listen to live streaming audio right now, and download our radio show tomorrow at philhenryshow.com. Also, downloads from our archives made more and more available each and every day. We just put, another month's worth of downloads into our archives. And we begin our podcasts on iTunes next week. Not only podcasts of our current show, but we will do a podcast of our archival material as well. So get a backstage pass because it is the best value in terms of entertainment in the history of man on this planet or any other that we dare to explore. Director Oliver Stone has been forced to apologize over a rant against Jews. That's so in the headlines here. The Double Academy Award winner claimed that the Russians suffered more during the Second World War and that there was a Jewish domination of the media. And that's certainly something I think I've probably heard somewhere before. He also claimed that Jews monitor every comment made against them and that they had, quote, effed up U.S. foreign policy for years. It was an interview in January He sparked fury when he claimed that Hitler was an easy scapegoat. Well, his latest comments brought swift condemnation from Jewish people in the U.S. and Israel and forced the 63-year-old to make a contrite apology. He said, quote, in trying to make a broader historical point about the range of atrocities that the Germans committed against many people, I made a clumsy association about the Holocaust, for which I am sorry and I regret. Jews obviously do not control the media or any other industry. Well, that's what Oliver Stone is saying today, but of course, you know as well as I do, we know which side of the bread the butter's on, and if it looks as if something may be happening to your career that might negatively impact your commercial success, I guess people will say a lot of things. Dean Wheeler is joining us tonight from the Bay Area and the Northern California Holistic Center. Dean, what is your take on Oliver Stone tonight?
Well, Oliver Stone is one of our great filmmakers. I'm always very proud of the output of Oliver Stone being truly one of the world's recognized courageous voices, Phil, in the making of film. Because he has that courageous voice, he's going to attract lightning. It's a lightning rod, and he's had a lightning rod career. I think that when an Oliver Stone speaks and offers an opinion on the state of the world, we have to stop and we have to say, okay, this is a reset. This is a new experience that we have to understand. We're not just listening to someone giving an opinion in a coffee shop somewhere. We're not listening to someone offering an opinion on a, forgive me, but a talk show. This is Oliver Stone. Okay, this is the man who made Platoon. This is the man who wrote Midnight Express. This is the man who made Born on the 4th of July. This is the man who made JFK, The Doors. We can go on and on. And we have to, at that point, we have to say we are being told something. And more likely, we're being taught something. I don't know, Phil, what the answer is. But I know if Oliver Stone tells me that he is afraid that there are Jews controlling what he is saying and what other filmmakers are saying, we owe it to ourselves.
Oh, come on. I mean, this is stuff that's, this tripe has been trotted out over and over.
No, I know that it has been trotted. It's been trotted out, as you put it, over and over, by a lot of people that whose credibility is suspect from the gate, and it's been spoken of and it's been discussed by all kinds of uninteresting and very unscholastic people. I will give you that. But what I'm asking you to understand
is that Oliver Stone's saying it.
Is that one of the greatest voices that this generation has ever had, and perhaps one of the greatest voices that America has had in the second half of the 20th century. One of the greatest voices in film that the world has ever had. When he says that Hitler, we may need a reset. I know it. I don't know.
We need a reset on Hitler? Are you serious?
I don't know. I'm saying, listen, please listen to what I'm saying. You have to, I'm telling you, I don't know the answer, but you've got to take another look at it when an Oliver Stone is the one who's bringing the meat to the table.
And why do I have to take another look at it? Because Oliver Stone, if a guy says to me, we better take another run at Hitler because it might not have been all that, you know, it might have had a lot to...
Well, no, wait a minute. He didn't say it might not have been all that bad. Okay.
No, but he did say, you know, I saw what he said. He said that Hitler was a scapegoat. Okay.
What he was saying was, in fairness, Phil, let's be fair. He was saying, all right, you know, Hitler, fine. I get it about Hitler. What did the Jews do that we need to check in with them on? That's what he's saying.
And what did the Jews do that we need to check? I'm telling you, this is an...
I came on your program to present an opinion. I didn't come on your program necessarily to be interrupted. I don't. You could run your show any way you want, but I don't really want to be a party to a program.
All right, but sir, you're going to have a give and take with me.
I understand that, but I don't want to be a party to anything that I'm interrupted constantly.
Well, all right. Here is a question, and I would be very grateful if you'd answer it.
All right.
What do you think Oliver Stone means when he says the Jews? Hey, what did they do that might have caused this, making Hitler a scapegoat?
That's just that. That's just it. I am not so egotistical. I am not so in love with myself that I'm going to begin to presume motives or presume the thinking pattern or the thought process or the way that he arrived at a thought. I'm not going to assume this about Oliver Stone because I don't make the kinds of films that he makes. I didn't make Platoon. I didn't make Born on the 4th of July. I didn't make The Doors. I didn't make JFK, okay? I didn't make World Trade Center. I didn't make these films that are going to stand as pillars. Pillars that support not just the arts for years to come. These films of Oliver Stone's will stand as pillars supporting life, cultural life as we know it. And
because of the fact that he is because he's made films of such value,
because he's made films of such value, I've got to, as a man of good conscience, stop and say, if Oliver Stone is telling me that I need to take just a little bit of a harder look at what the Jews did to bring on their own persecution. If Oliver Stone is, I'll give you another example, Phil. If Oliver Stone is telling me that I need to take another look at Hugo Chavez, that maybe Hugo Chavez is a man who knows something about what's going on in that part of the world, if I've got to take another look at Che Guevara, if I've got to take another look at Fidel Castro, if I have to take another look at these people, because Oliver Stone, forgive me, but not Phil Hendry, Oliver Stone said, there's something going on there that we need to look at, that I'm going to do that.
Do you believe that Hugo Chavez or Fidel Castro are men worthy of our admiration?
I'm telling you that if Oliver Stone, the man who made Platoon...
I know, Born on the 4th of July, I know all those movies.
All right, if that man says Hugo Chavez has got a lot of good things to say, then I owe it to myself to listen to what Hugo Chavez has to say. Because Oliver Stone, Phil, is the most authentic American voice of possibly the last 100 years.
All right, Dean Wheeler joins us on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and you heard him. These are outrageous comments made by Oliver Stone, that Hitler was a scapegoat, that the Russians suffered more than the Jews did, that Jews controlled the media, and that Hugo Chavez is a very unique and marvelous kind of a guy, and all of these other statements that he made. And with us is Dean Wheeler saying, well, if Oliver Stone made these comments as opposed to anybody else, then we owe it to ourselves as a country to take another look at it. Because it is, after all, Oliver Stone saying it. And I was trying to find, there was a major lobby in the United States. This is Oliver Stone talking about Jews, I think. The Jewish domination of the media. They are hard workers. They stay on top of every comment. The most powerful lobby in Washington, Israel, has effed up United States foreign policy. In a statement, the American Jewish Council had a statement. They just said that he was an anti-Semite. He also made some statements concerning Hugo Chavez that were complimentary to Hugo Chavez. 877-876-PHIL is our number here. We're talking with Dean Wheeler about Oliver Stone. 877-876, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and your call's coming up next.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Back with Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center as we talk about comments made by Oliver Stone, which has had some people upset. It should upset everybody because these are the kind of revisionist, typically revisionist comments that we hear from crackpots who deny the Holocaust. People that are frankly, you know, off the beaten path. And yet, Dean, you are saying that because they're being uttered by Oliver Stone, we have to give them credibility.
Well, it's like saying, Phil, what you're saying to me as well, because, you know, so-and-so and such a stuff. I mean, I think that there are people, I don't want to compare him to Thomas Jefferson, I would never do that, but if Thomas Jefferson said something and I said to you, well, that's just Thomas Jefferson's opinion, I think you would rightfully look at me and look at me as if I needed to be, put in an insane asylum. I'm not saying that that's how I'm looking at you. I think a lot of people, though, tonight, listening to your broadcast, are saying, well, you know who Oliver Stone is. I suppose I could ask you, do you know who Oliver Stone is? You'd say, well, he's a filmmaker. But have you ever really looked at his films? Have you been involved in discussions of his films at all?
No, I've never been involved in a discussion of his film, and I have to tell you that Oliver Stone, his movies don't impress me. You know,
well, that's where we're having the problem. You do not recognize, I think, what a lot of people do. Oliver Stone has said that Ahmadinejad, for instance, in Iran, is a man who is ahead of his time. I have to listen to that, and I have to take that seriously. Because this is a man who has not just made film. He has documented and interwoven life and art in ways that others just have never been able to.
So, Ahmadinejad, Chavez, the oil leak is Bush's fault.
Well, I take it back to Oliver Stone.
Yeah, all of these things, though, are credible because Oliver Stone said them. 877-876-PHIL. Kelly in San Rafael, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
I am absolutely repulsed by your guest because he is so a celebrity. He's a slave to celebrity and obviously wants a job in Hollywood because the guy is a lunatic. Oliver Stone's film...
I'm so grateful that you come on calling me names.
Well, because...
I live in Northern California. I have no desire to work in Hollywood. I don't want to go down to LA.
If everyone recognizes his art, why are his films not making any money? They don't make any money because ever since JFK, the guy has gone off the deep end.
Not everyone is perceptive.
Oh, well, there are only a special few like you, Mr. Wheeler.
I think you would have to recognize.
No, I don't
recognize.
Perception is not a universal. Who makes no money in Hollywood because his films are not making any money because people don't want to see them because they recognize that he's simply a dirt
people
kicker.
People are not, I think, intelligent enough.
Well,
in American history,
I think this anti-Semitism masked as your art appreciation is repulsive and really shouldn't be voice on air.
I didn't get out of bed this morning.
Stone said it. I mean,
Oliver Stone said something. Would you not at least take a look at it?
Hello. He didn't write Platoon. He didn't write Born on the 4th of July. He didn't write any of these films.
He wrote Midnight Express.
But he didn't direct it.
He also, Platoon was based on his experiences in Vietnam.
He did not write Platoon.
So I think you have
he
to
did not
recognize
write Platoon. No, I don't recognize.
He
enjoyed
he
Platoon.
He was a war veteran. He's a combat veteran.
That doesn't have anything to do with the fact that now his anti-Semitic statements are being bruited around and promoting this idea that Jews are responsible for the Holocaust or their own pain and suffering. This is sickening. This is a sickening idea.
It is very disturbing to know. But you know what else is disturbing? The truth. And I'm trying to say that however disturbing it may be, Oliver Stone has made a career of digging for the truth. Look what he unveiled in JFK.
Truth? Do you think JFK was the truth?
Oh, JFK was a crackpot movie.
Oh, very convenient of you people to call it crackpot when it utilized the Pentagon Papers.
What about that, Dean? This is anti-Semitism that we've heard before. This is nothing that Mr. Stone is saying is unique. I've tried to make this point to you. This is a revisionist's script. I've heard this many times from many other people. But you're saying that because Mr. Stone is saying it...
Well, Mr. Henry, Oliver Stone is in the mainstream of Hollywood. It would be the same thing as if, for instance, Jay Leno got up one night and said, Jews are running Hollywood.
Hello, Mr. Wheeler. We're supposed to listen to the high school dropouts and drug addicts that are Hollywood.
I'm asking you, do you think they know something about it?
People who are Hollywood but have nothing to offer in terms of other than art.
Don't you think they know something about it?
What are you telling me? If Jay Leno got on The Tonight Show and said what?
If Jay Leno on The Tonight Show said, Jews are running my life, don't you think he'd know something about it?
He could also be lying. He could also be stating something that is a perception of his, but doesn't take into consideration why there might be a higher percentage of Jews in the entertainment business.
Is it essentially a lie for him to say that Jews are ruining my life? I'm Jay Leno. Now, I would ask Kelly to think of that. I'd ask you to think of that.
All right, I got to take a break. Kelly, I appreciate your call, and I agree with you. 877-876-PHIL. Back with Dean Wheeler in a moment. If
Phil.
Jay Leno said it.
Jews are ruining me.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. And with me is Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center as we talk about Oliver Stone, these comments made by Mr. Stone, which, as I said, and I think you agree, Dean, are a pretty standard bit of revisionist claptrap about Jews owning Hollywood, Jews making Hitler the scapegoat, and yet you are willing to look at those statements as possibly credible because they were made by Oliver Stone. And you even went so far as to say Jay Leno may have some knowledge.
I said if Jay Leno, if, for instance, don't you think an entertainer would have some information? If you were to ask that person, are Jews running Hollywood? I would take Jay Leno's word for it before I took anyone else's word for it. And the same, I think, holds true of a Oliver Stone. Now, if you take Oliver Stone's obvious education, I think, in the area of global history, political history, and so on and so forth, we must at least stop what we're doing and sit down and listen to a man who is telling us that Ahmadinejad, there might be something there. There might be perhaps even a great man.
All right. Whatever. Let's listen to, I don't know which one, number three, Jace, or number one, I forget. We've got a C-SPAN caller who called up not too long ago, and this is an individual, it's number three, yeah, this is an individual.
Oh, I know this caller. This is. I wish that this person had been interviewed more extensively, because I think this is probably where Oliver got some of his attitude.
Hi there, your thoughts on the Helen Thomas issue?
Yeah, I thought that her statements were spot on. I mean, they were accurate statements. The people in Israel who run the country are immigrants coming from Europe who were kicked out mainly because of diseases and homosexuality that were spreading in Germany. The Germans wanted them out. That's what caused the killing that occurred there. We didn't take them.
You're,
we
you're saying all of the killings in the Holocaust were people who were homosexuals or unwanted by Germany?
It was caused by the fact that diseases were spreading and there was a panic in the country because of syphilis spreading all over the country and because of prostitution and homosexuality that was spreading.
Okay, what was your comment?
Well, again, that was Oliver Stone on C-SPAN.
I didn't. That's Oliver Stone?
I think that was Oliver Stone calling. And as odious as that may sound, you've got to say, all right, I'm going to have to take two steps back, sit down, take a deep breath, and open my ears up a little bit and see what else Mr. Stone has to say.
That gonorrhea and diseases like that spreading through Germany is what caused the Holocaust against Jews.
I am simply saying, let's take another look at it.
Because Oliver Stone says we should take another look at it.
Because I'll go back to what I said about Jay Leno. If he said on The Tonight Show, Jews, I can't get Jews out of my life, wouldn't you believe it based upon what he does for a living?
I would think that he'd lost his mind. 877-876-PHIL. Here is a phone call from Wilmington, North Carolina. Kevin, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just wanted to make the comment. When you guys said the Russians had suffered more than the Jews, I just want to put it in context that, you know, the estimates of the Russians, the deaths of the Russians were somewhere around 20 million. So, and the Jews, and I'm not trying to be insensitive, were around 6 million. So in that context, maybe you could say that they did suffer worse. So I don't, either way, it's an atrocity.
Why are my facts wrong? You said my facts are wrong. Why are my facts wrong?
Well, I was just trying to comment about the, say, when you brought up about
You said my facts were wrong. You said that my facts were wrong?
Well, I apologize. Maybe I misunderstood. I just, when I heard the part about that you had said that the Russians had suffered worse, and you made it sound as though they had not suffered as worse or as bad as. So I was just trying to bring
the Russians didn't suffer near as bad as the Jews, but Oliver Stone says that they did, so I have to look at that, and I have to say, Oliver Stone, you know, Oliver Stone.
Well,
and I think you should, too.
If they lost,
and so the Russians suffered worse than the Jews. That's what Oliver Stone's saying, so I agree with you.
No, wait. What are you two guys saying, then?
This gentleman agrees with me that the Russians suffered more than the Jews did.
Both of you guys are wrong, then. Both of you are wrong. Both of you are wrong. The Jewish people were systematically rounded up in their homes, laws passed, they couldn't work, they couldn't own pets, they couldn't walk on the sidewalk, they couldn't use public parks, they couldn't go to the toilet in certain areas, they were stripped of their jobs and their professions, they were stripped of their money by way of tax dollars. The Russian people were persecuted, but there was not a codified system in place of exclusion of Russians from their own country like there was for Jews. So both of you don't know what you're talking about, which is not unusual when it comes to this topic. Thanks very much, Kevin. 877-876-PHIL.
Wait. You've just in one fell swoop.
No, both you and Kevin don't know your ass from a hole in the ground, because I'm telling you, I know the history of, I know the entire history of that epic and that era, and neither one of you guys know what you're talking about.
Well, all right. Then you heard Oliver Stone on C-SPAN.
And you're telling me this is Oliver Stone on C-SPAN talking about what happened?
Your thoughts on the Helen Thomas
issue. In the Holocaust?
Yeah, I think that her statements were spot on. I mean, they were accurate statements.
That's Oliver Stone agreeing with Helen Thomas.
Israel, who
right there, that's Oliver Stone.
It sounds like him.
Coming from Europe, who were kicked out mainly because of diseases and homosexuality
right.
that was spreading.
877-876 Phil, world famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be back.
That's what caused the all the killings that occurred there.
Phil Hendry.
Back on here with Dean Wheeler for a few more minutes on our show, talking about Oliver Stone. He apologized, though, for these claims that he made that Hitler was a scapegoat in World War II who did more damage to Russians than Jews.
he has to apologize. I think that if any time you make comments that are that powerful, that it's attracted the attention of the power elite in Hollywood, you're going to have to do your mea culpa. I don't know if he has retracted entirely his belief or has rescinded his belief, or has he just made nice with the powers that be. I don't know. I know that Oliver Stone, if you look at his films, and again, it all springs from his films, Phil. It all springs from the kind of greatness that he has shown us on the screen. Cape Fear, The Shining, not The Shining, The Shining, yeah.
No, The Shining was Stanley Kubrick.
Well, Cape Fear, then. Cape Fear is another example of the macabre that Oliver Stone is very familiar with. And so if you take that into consideration, this is a man that many people have said is very twisted or warped, if you will. I think it's because he has been privy to a lot of warped and twisted things.
Would you consider yourself to be anti-Semitic, then, if you agreed with Oliver Stone and what he said, and you, from this point forward, Dean, believed that Hollywood was run by Jews and that Hitler was a scapegoat?
No, I would not. And I'll tell you why.
You would not consider yourself to be systematically opposed to, or not opposed to Jews so much as looked upon Jews as a negative force, a negative influence, a negative presence in the world?
No, I don't think so. Because as long as I was able to follow, if I was agreeing with Oliver Stone, because it all flows from Stone. In other words, it flows from Stone. If he said it and I agree with it, then it's flowing downhill from Stone. And I feel confident.
You feel, what do you want, bud?
My name's Bud Dickman. I want to ask you a question, sir, okay?
What, I didn't hear it?
His name is Bud Dickman. He's a producer. What do you want, bud?
I want to ask you a question. Are you saying that a Jew told Oliver Stone how to make a movie?
I'm not. I can't. Is that a man that is on your program?
Yeah, I'm a producer.
He's one of my producers.
And what was your question again, sir?
If a Jew told Oliver Stone to make a movie, are you saying that's what he's going to be doing?
Well, I have to be. I was listening to him, but I forgot the question. Listening to him stuttering or whatever that was.
I wasn't stuttering.
Well, just spit the question out. If a Jew told Oliver Stone what?
If a Jew told Oliver Stone to make a movie.
If a Jew. Well, I think. And what is your name again?
My name's Bud Dickman.
Well, that's just it, but I think...
His name isn't Butt, it's Bud Dickman.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right.
Yeah, my name's Bud.
All right, well, I think if a Jew told Oliver... I think what you have is that a Jew is telling Oliver Stone to make a move. And that's what Oliver Stone is trying to say to us. Oliver's talking to us, and he is talking through a sort of a Jewish screen or a Jewish microphone. So the Jewish microphone is screening out. He's telling us through the Jewish screen that he's being told to make these movies.
Oh, okay. So, like, what was the one?
The what?
What movie did they make him say?
Wait a minute. Wait. Hold on for just a minute.
I didn't hear his question.
Hold on for a minute. What are you talking about, bud? Did a Jew tell Oliver Stone to make a movie?
Did they?
And I think I answered. I said it to get filtered through the Jewish filter.
Filtered through the Jewish filter, they made him make a movie.
They told him, but they put it through a... forgive me for saying it, but a friend of mine made a joke. He called it the Jew filter tip. And he put it through the Jew filter.
And a friend of yours made that joke, huh?
That doesn't make me an anti-Semite, Mr. Henry. You... understand that Hollywood, you know, we all write comedy.
I thought you were in Northern California. Forgive me.
I had a dream at one time. You know, if you remember the Susan Boyle.
All right, you wanted to be a writer.
Yes, I did. If you remember Susan Boyle, I dreamed a dream.
of time gone by in a day. But I was raped. You know, I forget how the song goes, but my dreams were raped from me.
Yeah, but again, I want to...
Get off the microphone, bud, please. Now, what's your question?
How many movies did Oliver Stone make that a Jew told him?
If I understand his question...
How many movies did Oliver Stone make that Jews told him to make?
Yes, I would say most of them.
Well, how did he tell him?
Well, I mentioned by email or
Are you serious?
Are you talking to me?
No, I'm talking to you, bud. Are you serious?
No, how did they tell him?
First of all, I don't believe that that's what's happening. And for you to be asking this man, Mr. Wheeler, about how it all takes place, and Dean, forgive me, but you sound ridiculous that Jews communicate their wishes to Oliver Stone and the kinds of movies he should make by way of email.
Well, what other way would they use?
Well, I don't think there's anybody communicating anything to him. I think he makes his stupid movies. I think they either pass or they produce on him, produce them based upon how good they are. Right? Bud, what is your interest in this?
Well, the only reason why I was asking is because he talked about Platoon and he talked about Born on 4th of July and all those movies that were pretty good, I thought. But I know that a Jew would make him do it. Does that mean then that he's that good, you know?
Well, that's a very good point. I think at some point we do have to credit the Jew that forced him into making that movie as the real talent there.
Dean, I appreciate very much your call.
What's the problem?
The problem is that you're sounding ridiculous. That Oliver Stone was forced into making a movie by a Jew, and therefore that Jew is the one who was the real talent there, and Oliver Stone doesn't have it. And, Bud, why are you even interested in this?
Well, I wanted to... ask him, because there's no phone calls.
Get out of here, okay?
He said I'm not getting... There's no phone calls?
No, there's not.
Well, does that mean that people don't like what I'm talking about, or that you're hosting the show?
Probably both.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm joking. No, I think that it's just a little too far out for people. I think it's a little too far out, it's a little too goofy, and I don't think anybody really... I don't think anybody can relate to your absolute adoration and love for Oliver Stone.
It's not gay.
No, I don't know that it's gay, but I think it's probably, worse than gay, if gay can be called bad. I think it's unthinking. It's just a sycophantic attraction to Oliver Stone.
Well, no, it isn't. I would disagree with that. I admire him.
You admire him so much that if he said that Jews were running his life and running Hollywood and running the world, you'd have to take a look at that. You admire him so much that if he said that Hitler was a scapegoat, you'd have to stop down and take another run at that one, because maybe Hitler is getting too much heat, and on and on. And Ahmadinejad and Hugo Chavez, all of that.
Well, if I come up sounding loyal to a particular point of view, I apologize. But I don't like Oliver Stone's movies that much. Are you saying I sound...
You sound like you think his movies are so great, Bud, am I right?
Yeah, you say you think his movies are so bitchin' that you think if he said a Jew is doing it, that you'd have to take a long look at a Jew.
Yeah, I did say that.
And who are you?
My name's Robert.
It's Robert?
Yeah.
Well, what are you saying, Phil?
Exactly what they're saying. You sound asinine.
Well...
You sound asinine. Oliver Stone is so fantastic. Didn't you hear that one lady that called up? Oliver Stone is so fantastic, you know?
Yeah, didn't you hear the one phone call?
Well...
Will you shut up, bud? Oliver Stone is so fantastic that if he said, and if Jay Leno came out on The Tonight Show and said that Jews won't get out of my life, we'd have to buy it because he's in entertainment.
I thought that had a good... I thought I was making a good point there.
It's a asinine point. Let me tell you why there's all kinds of Jews in entertainment. Do you want to know why?
Oh, so you say that there are.
There's a lot of Jewish people in entertainment. There's no question about it. There's no question. A lot of Catholic people in entertainment, too. A lot of my people are in entertainment, Catholic people. But I'll tell you why there's a lot of Jewish people in all of these different walks of life, like banking, like entertainment.
Here we go. Yeah, you already gave this speech.
I want to hear it.
Wait a minute.
I want to hear it.
Oh, wait a minute. What's with you?
Well, you already told everybody about it.
Well, I'm going to tell them again. How about that?
I'm not sure I heard it, and I would like to hear a little bit of it.
You're just saying that because you're scared.
Well, he does look pissed off.
Hey, look it, man. You don't have to listen to anything I've got to say. Nothing, okay? Nothing.
Well, I want to hear it, Mr. Henry.
Okay, thank you. Jews...
Please watch the way you say Jew, though, because it sounds anti-Semitic.
Okay. Well, yes, sir. I'll keep that in mind.
Well, I know that I've said a lot of outrageous things.
Jewish people have found themselves in these professions because other professions, going back to the very earliest parts of their expulsion from the Middle East, of their sojourn out of the Middle East, and their sojourn into Europe and other parts of the world, they were banned from other more traditional trades like farming, like being members of a carpenter's guild or a bricklayer's guild, like being fishermen. They were banned. They were not allowed by law, especially in Europe, to occupy any position in those trades. The tradesmen themselves didn't want Jews hanging around there. They didn't want to have to compete with them. So Jewish people were forced to become merchants. They couldn't be farmers, they couldn't be bricklayers, they couldn't be fishermen, they couldn't be that stuff, so they became merchants.
What is that?
That's like a guy that runs a store.
Yeah, I got like a guy that runs a store, a guy that runs a bank even.
Oh, is that why they Jew people with money?
I'm going to belt you if I hear that again.
No, that's not, I don't think that's what Mr. Henry's saying.
What?
They charged interest at an exorbitant rate because the church forced them to kick back half of it to them, the church. But the church also allowed them to charge that interest because Jews were not considered to be human beings. And so they were not subject to the laws of human beings. Now, this is all history. This is all fact. This is not anything that can be refuted. This is a fact. And this has stayed with the Jewish people all these hundreds of years to the point where very few of them are involved in those kinds of professions that you would think. Farming, bricklaying, carpenter, electrician, all those things, right? They were in the merchant business. They were in the banking business. They went into the arts. They were writers. They were philosophers. They were teachers. They were intellectuals. Because that's what was allowed to them. And as a result, they flourished in those crafts and in those trades and in that line of work. And today, yes, there's a lot of Jewish entertainers and people that know the arts very well because that is where the Jewish people were allowed to make a living. That and other places. The law. Banking. Nothing to do with their aptitude for money. It has to do with where they were allowed to be.
Well, I don't believe it. If I can get Oliver Stone's number.
I'll get it from C-SPAN.
Thank you.
Yeah. Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. What a jackass.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hi there. Your thoughts on the Helen Thomas issue?
I don't think that a lot of people...
That they didn't bother to communicate to the passengers, hey, this is what's going on.
There has been a culture in Washington...
He's stupid.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we will take you, if need be, through the looking glass to find it. And our number here every night is 877-876-PHIL. A Christian student faced expulsion from a program because of her beliefs, plus the five grossest stadiums to buy food in. 877-876-PHIL, our website, philhendryshow.com. And if you're watching live streaming video tonight, you are looking at me losing my mind behind the scenes again. You know.
What are you on the rag for tonight?
Yeah.
What do you mean on the rag?
What are you all pissed off about?
Just stuff behind the scenes, man. I ain't going to get into it.
You're all yelling at everybody and stuff.
Right, man. I mean, that's just where it's at, you know? I mean, sorry. This is a really, really emotional kind of pressure cooking environment when you're doing a radio show, especially when I'm looking at you.
Oh, yeah, okay. It's all my fault, huh?
No, it ain't all your fault. With your finger paints and your crayons.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, man. Bring that stuff in here.
Helps me think.
So if you got a backstage pass, you can watch the live streaming video of the show, and you can watch me, like I said, losing my ever-loving mind. Because that's the way it is sometimes. Like I said, it's a radio show that's wrapped in a reality show. And you can also hear our live streaming audio. You can download the show the next day. Coming up next week, we will have our radio show available for download off of iTunes for our Backstage Pass subscribers, that is. And, of course, we'll also have, as I've promised you, archival podcasts starting next week. And over here at our website, we've got our archives. I mean, we got all kinds of stuff, man. So you've got to get it while the getting's good. That's philhendryshow.com. And pick up a Backstage Pass. Now, the podcasts for the I'm glad you reminded me, bud.
Yeah, because the podcast on the current show is going to be at a subscription. But the podcast of the archive.
Right. Our archival podcasts will be free. But the subscription will be the podcasts of the radio show, right?
Yeah, that's it. And then what you do is you go over to philhenryshow.com and you click the button that says subscribe, and then, you know, then follow the instructions and everything about that. I mean, it's pretty easy, but there's a lot of retards.
You know? All right, okay, fine, thank you.
Yeah, say retard, man. Well, but I mean, there are a lot of dumbasses.
Don't say that, man, okay? One of the things is when you're signing up, you know, there's all kinds of little tricks with the internet. And I understand people have a hard time, but, you know, if you have another browser open, sometimes you've got to close the browser and open it again. There's all kinds of things. We get these panics. People will call it, not call us, but they'll email us. I don't know what's happened, you know.
Yeah, I said I won.
No, the people that they'll email, you know, I don't know what happened. I just subscribed. I just got my new subscription. I got my password and everything. It's not working. You guys should really get your act together. You don't understand. Boy, what a waste of money. Right. And then you'll say, did you enter your password incorrectly? Or, oh, okay, thank you. You know, so I get it because I'm the same kind of guy. I'm the same way. I'm the same way. And it's made me appreciate much better now the way I am, you know, because I read these people's emails sometimes. They'll send them to me from the customer support. And it'll say, you know, I just signed up, and this and that, and this and that, and it's not working, and people are having a heart attack. And I realize I'm the same way when I am communicating with some entity, a company, or someone that I'm doing business with, and I don't get what I want, and I get the same kind of, you know, pissy mood, you know?
Well, but I mean, that's the way you are. That's the way some of the other people are. Most people got more patience.
Yeah, okay, that's fine, bud. In other words, you're better than me.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Okay, you're better. That's fine. I'm just saying, I get nuts.
Well, you know, most people have patience.
Yeah, great, thank you. You want to make me feel any worse than I do tonight? You just have.
Oh, come on, man. I mean, it's just one show.
Yeah, man, take it easy.
What is it with you two guys tonight, huh?
What?
What?
Oh, what are you, ganging up on me?
Hey, take it easy. No, man, you're losing your mind, everything. You ought to take a chill, man. I mean, if it's that much of a problem, man, you ought to just quit radio.
Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Oh, I ought to quit radio. And thank you for bringing this up on the air right now.
Well, I mean, you're getting all pissed off at everybody. Yeah, I just quit.
Yeah, man, what? There ain't no law keeping you out of being a farmer. Just Jews.
Yeah, just Jews can't be farmers.
Oh, is that right, huh?
How about you be a farmer?
Maybe I will be a farmer. What are you guys going to do when I leave radio and I'm a farmer?
Probably help you milk a cow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are smiling.
You got to just relax, man.
Okay, well, thanks a lot there, bud.
Okay, Farmer Phil.
Yeah, Farmer Phil. I like that.
Take a chill, man.
All right, I'm chilled out, okay? I'm sorry. I apologize. I do.
Really?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to Jason. I'm sorry to Charles. I'm sorry to Dan. I'm sorry to everybody. I apologize, and I'm apologizing on the air. I'm sorry that I lost my temper. You guys work your asses off. And I'm sorry to you, Robert, and I'm sorry to you, Bud.
All right, well, you don't have to get maudlin about it.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the big word, maudlin.
Just don't get maudlin.
Christian counseling student sues to stay in college. I better start reading before I start crying. Christian counseling student sues. Get out of there, will you?
Just dabbing your tears.
Get off that off of my eyes. Christian counseling student
sues to stay in college.
The guy's name is Stu?
Will you give me that? Christian college student sues to stay in college after school required diversity training and suggested attending gay pride. I've read that five times now. I don't know what that means. When officials at Georgia's Augusta State University told counseling student Jennifer Keaton they were concerned her outspoken Christian views might affect her ability to work with gay, lesbian, and transgender clients, they gave her a choice: participate in a remediation plan or leave school. Instead, she's chosen to sue. Last week, with the help of the Conservative Alliance Defense Fund, the 24-year-old filed a civil complaint against the school, alleging that her constitutional rights to freedom of speech and freedom of religion had been violated. I'm just kidding around there. So this young lady, her name Jennifer Keaton, and here she is, or at least here is an aspect of the story in a video interview posted on the Alliance Defense Fund website. Jennifer Keaton explains why she is suing this school. I want to find out. Oh, it's Augusta State University, Georgia's Augusta State University.
The school counseling faculty has decided that my views are not acceptable for me or to share with other students. And because of that, they have required a remediation plan in which the end result would be altering my beliefs or being dismissed from the program. While I want to stay in the school counseling program, I know that I can't honestly complete the remediation plan knowing that I would have to alter my beliefs. I'm not willing to, and I know I can't change my biblical views.
I don't know. How do you become a counselor, though?
Well, that's what you want to be, a counselor.
Yeah.
I know, but how do you be a counselor? How do you, if you're a counselor and that's what she wants to be, and that's fine, how can you counsel gay students? In other words, what she's saying is that she has the right to counsel gay students according to her religion, which basically means that you're, you know, the way you are is not normal or is somehow against nature, and she can counsel them to what?
I guess you counsel them, go over to gay camp or something, you know.
Yeah, I don't know the gay camp. You know, if they got one around there.
What do you mean gay camp? What are you guys talking about? Those places where they...
Yeah, they got a place where they turn you away from gay.
Well, they don't call it gay camp.
Well, if they got one around there, though.
Well, I don't even know if they had a gay camp around there. I don't know that that's healthy. Look, I mean, don't you have to adhere to a certain scientific standard? Don't you have to adhere to a certain professional standard when it comes to counseling? Is there not an accepted discipline when it comes to the counseling of individuals, and that if there's an aberration, if there is a diversion from that, or an aberration, you could be getting into areas that are dangerous.
Well, I mean, they probably don't think it's dangerous. If you say to a gay guy, look, man, I can't talk to you because of my religion, but here's a brochure for gay camp, you know.
Yeah, if you gave them a brochure for the camp, or where they turn you away from gay, you know, a brochure.
So what you guys are saying is she won't counsel them, just give them a brochure on gay camp.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the only way they'll be able to do it.
That's the goofiest idea I ever heard in my life. You know, I can't tell you about my beliefs, but here's a brochure on my beliefs. And by the way, here's gay camp. Plus, the cat's going to have to spend money to go to gay camp.
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, it stands to reason. If I'm a gay guy and I want to...
What are you doing?
I'm unbuttoning my pants. And no, it doesn't mean I'm in love with you. If I'm a gay guy...
Well, what are you unbuttoning your pants?
You shut up and let me finish. If I'm a gay guy and I say... I want to get ungayed. I want to be straight. And I go to a gay camp... Does that cost me money?
I don't know, man. You ask for me.
You want to find that out, bud. How much does it cost?
I think it's probably free because they say it's Jesus, you know.
Yeah, do you think so? Really?
Yeah.
You know, really? I got news for you. I bet you it costs. I want to be straight, man. So I'm going to go to gay camp. I'll bet you it costs those guys plenty. And there ain't nothing that guarantees your ass stays straight either. According to her civil complaint, school officials met with her a number of times this spring to express concern over her open disagreement with gay and lesbian lifestyles in her classes and in her writing assignments. You couldn't be a teacher, let alone a counselor, with those views, a faculty member told her during one meeting, according to the complaint.
Well, yes, you could in certain schools. In certain schools, you could. I would have to say in certain Christian schools, not all of them, but certain Christian schools, I'm sure you could. I think this young lady would have to recognize that there's not going to be open arms everywhere for your kind of philosophy when it comes to counseling students or teaching students. I'm sure you understand that. Anyway, this is where it's very dangerous. Religion is a dangerous thing, man, when it starts mucking around with, you know, how the rest of us live. The officials outlined a remediation plan for Keaton that would include such things as participating in diversity sensitivity workshops, completing reading and writing assignments of the topic, and possibly attempting, so in other words, changing her mind. Well, she doesn't want to change her mind. You are requiring me to alter my objective beliefs and also to commit now that if I ever may have a client who wants me to affirm their decision to have an abortion or engage in gay, lesbian, or transgender behavior, I will do that. I understand what she's saying. I understand what she's saying. She's saying, this is what I believe. I'm not going to change my beliefs. I got it. At some point, she has to recognize that there is a professional standard that this school adheres to in teaching. For instance, I'll give you an example. If you're a school and you want to be accredited and you want to send young people off to the university system in your state or elsewhere, and you're a Christian school, you may want to teach, and you can teach, creationism. Yes, you may teach creationism. There's nothing against that. But you must also teach evolution if you want your school to have accreditation and to send kids on and get kids ready for the university system in science. You have to. You got no choice. So if you say to a young woman, you have a right to, you know, say what you want, believe what you want, but in teaching and in training counselors, we have a certain standard that we have to adhere to. At some point, we have to say, you know, you're not right for the kind of counseling program that we have at Augusta State University.
Yeah, okay, now I understand, because that was...
Yeah, you were losing me, man.
When was I losing you?
When you were talking all about, like, evolution and everything like that.
I didn't know what that had to do with it.
All right, we'll be back here. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
This
I don't even, I lost me.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, we're all talking about evolution.
All right, coming up, we have Bud's News. Right, Bud?
I'm getting together.
Or, excuse me, it's not Bud's News. It's the Bud Dickman Nightly Report or something.
Well, yeah.
Okay, the Bud Dickman, because I know I got directed to call it the Bud Dickman Nightly Report, and I don't want another call from David G. So that's coming up in just a moment. Now, forgive me, but I was going to, and I still intend to, do this story on these stadiums. These are ballparks. These are public venues that are the vilest. They are the most disgusting. They are the foulest. They're funky, man. They're all messed up. These are the five grossest, they say. This is how they describe it, ESPN and Men's Lifestyle blog. Hey, here's a tip for you, ESPN and Asylum.com. Gross is a girl's word, right? You got to use a different word for guys. Guys, it's gross. That sounds like a chick is talking, okay? If this is a story for men, then you can just say the five unhealthiest stadiums.
Well, what, because girls use dumb words?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying.
Well, look, man, I don't hear you guys say, I don't say gross, do you?
No.
All right.
Well, I mean, that's a good point, but I mean, what word will we use?
How about unhealthy?
Well, that makes it sound like women don't know the word unhealthy. They say gross. Man say unhealthy. You know, how about, what was that one you say?
Well, you say funky. How about I say funk, like the funk of a thousand years.
What's the funk of a thousand years?
That you know the Swede used to say that?
Yeah, the Swede, I'll tell you, it smelled like the funk of a thousand years.
The Swede used to say it smells like the funk of a thousand years. Yeah, okay. He was talking about like when someone left the bathroom door open. What's that got to do with this?
Well, you can say that.
The five stadiums with the funk of 1,000 years. No, man, no one's going to know what we're talking about. The funk of 1,000 years.
Now, man, I thought that was really descriptive that a Swede would talk that way, you know.
Yeah, because basically that says it all.
Yeah, that says it all, man. All right, Swede, if you're listening, man, you know, somewhere along the line we'll incorporate that into the show. The funk of 1,000 years. The five grossest stadiums, how about just the five rottenest, most unhealthy stadiums in America to buy food at? It's not a scientific poll. It was conducted by ESPN, which proves it's not scientific, and Asylum.com men's lifestyle blog. Recently, ESPN collected data, quote unquote, on the percentage of concession stands at each of North America's major professional sports venues that were tagged hit with critical health violations. Asylum.com has taken ESPN's data and formed our own list of the five grossest stadiums in North America based on, what do you think?
I think it's a gay site.
Asylum.com?
Yeah, that's the word.
All right, well, whatever. Well, so what? So you're saying that's why they use the word gross?
Maybe.
Anyway, Asylum.com has taken ESPN's data and formed our own list of the five grossest stadiums in North America based on additional criteria since city health departments are not equally aggressive in their duties. We've computed these rankings based on a nominally scientific formula that includes how a venue compares to the others in its area, plus ESPN's anecdotal reporting of specific, unappetizing violations seen at that particular stadium. The funkiest, all right, here is the fifth funkiest, because they've got five. They give us five. The fifth funkiest home to the funk of 1,000 years. How's that, bud?
Yeah, that's it. Say it. The Oakland Alameda County Stadium is the fifth home to the funk.
Yeah, the fifth home to the funk of 1,000 years.
All right, here is the fifth largest home to the funk of to the funk of 1,000 years. Oakland's Alameda County Stadium, or Coliseum, I should say, home to the Raiders and home to the Athletics. It's appropriate that this stadium, known as the McAfee Coliseum, is as recently as 2008, was once named after an antivirus software. Its concession stands could use a good sweep. The home of the A's and the Raiders easily garnered the highest percentage of critical health violations of any major sports venue in California, including almost twice as high percentage as Oracle Arena, the other pro sports venue in Oakland. Violations include several outposts lacking proper hand washing facilities. I'd believe it. Home of the Raiders, it's got to be funky, you know.
Yeah.
All right, so Oakland's Alameda County Stadium is the fifth funkiest joint. Now, number four. Oh, whoa, whoa. Number four. Hey, Minnesota Nice, how about that Target Center? Yeah.
Man, you kidding me? The Minnesotans are dirty?
Says here that the fourth funkiest hole in North American sports stadiums is the Target Center. Much like the Oakland Raiders, the Minnesota T-Wolves are a franchise in sharp decline. Also like the Raiders, they play in a venue that stands out among its neighbors for having a high percentage of food vendors that have collected health violations. One concession stand at the Target Center was cited for not cleaning a meat slicer enough to prevent cross-contamination. Ooh! That's the Target Center, home of the Timber Puppies. All right, we'll be back with more of this nonsense. Plus, Bud Dickman's nightly report on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Bud Dickman report next.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, coming up, we have Bud Dickman's nightly report. You're getting that together, huh, Bud?
Yeah, I got a couple of stories.
All right, we'll do that in just a moment. Bud Dickman's nightly report. Anyway, we were doing the five grossest stadiums, the five dirtiest stadiums, the five most disease-ridden stadiums. Now, this is not scientific. This is according to Asylum.com, which is a men's lifestyle blog, and ESPN. We told you that number five is the fifth worst, and we're working our way all the way to number one. Oakland's Alameda County Stadium was number five, the worst in California. Number four, we just read to you, is the Target Center in Minneapolis, where the Minnesota Timberwolves play basketball. They had a high percentage of food vendors that have collected health violations. One concession stand at the Target Center was cited for not cleaning a meat slicer enough to prevent cross-contamination. I mean, you could believe this, too, you know. And like I was saying, Robert was all ears about this one.
Yeah, about those press box.
Exactly. If you go to the press box at these stadiums, now that's something completely different.
Are you kidding me? They're serving it up sweet and fresh?
You bet. You bet they are. Sweet and fresh.
Like what, man?
Like if you go to the press box, I don't know about these stadiums, but I've been to the press box at the Georgia Dome. I've been to the press box there at Joe Robbie Stadium. I've been to the press box at the Coliseum in Los Angeles, you know, some places. And man, they ain't no cross-contamination going on there.
Bet you they're slicing up big slabs of roast beef and everything.
Yep. And on in the morning, like on Sunday morning before a football game, oh man, they're making the omelets, and they've got prime rib, and
that's all for the reporters and everything, the TV people.
Exactly. I stood next to Dan Dierdorf one game. You know, I think it must have been a Monday night game. Big tall drink of water. This guy's getting his food before he goes up there and lisped his way through another Monday night game. Oh yeah. All right. So number four was talking now. Number five. Ford Field in Detroit. Ever since they declined a government bailout, Ford has been known as the good car company. Well, Ford Field is well behind its Detroit area peers in terms of cleanliness. Within the confines of the indoor football stadium, 70% of food vendors were hit with critical health violations, including one where inspectors found a half-eaten hamburger in a warming unit. Oh, get out of here.
What does that mean?
Those little warming things?
Yeah.
Somebody put a half-eaten hamburger in there.
Oh, man.
God, that's sickening. That actually makes sense, according to Asylum.com, so as having to watch the woeful lions would make anyone lose their appetite mid-meal. Isn't that just marvelous? Number two on our list here, just ahead of Bud Dickman's nightly report, Tropicana Field, Tampa Bay. That's the home of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. Florida health inspectors seem to take a more aggressive look at sports venues when compared with health inspectors in other jurisdictions. Still, there is no excuse for Tropicana Field in Tampa, where a whopping 100% of the food vendors were given critical violations. Maybe the squalid condition of food services at the Trop is why the Rays continue to struggle to attract fans, despite being one of the better teams in baseball. Just remember this. When you go to these ballparks and they're being hit with these health violations, remember where you heard it. You go up to the press box where the working press is, and they're getting fed for free, and the food they get is fantastic, and they've got chefs there with the chef hat, you know.
Yeah, that's the part, man. They got a guy with a hat with a chef hat.
Yeah, the big tall hat.
Right.
See, they don't have that for regular people.
That would go a long way toward making things better.
Well, what difference does it make if they have a guy with a big tall hat?
Because it just looks cool. You think that, oh, wow, here's a chef. He's cooking it up.
Well, it doesn't mean it's clean. Is that what you guys are talking about?
No, I mean, how come we don't get to have a guy with a chef hat?
Who cares if you got a guy with a chef hat? That doesn't mean that the guy... Are you talking about that big, tall hat they wear with the big, poofy top?
Yeah. Like Chef Burger. How come we don't get to have one?
It doesn't. Don't you want to have good food?
Yeah, but you have good food if you got a man with a chef hat.
No, you don't get a guy with a chef hat doesn't mean good food.
Well, wait, are you kidding me or something? Boy, what an idiot.
Don't call me an idiot.
Yeah, but I mean, if a guy got a chef hat, that means he went to chef school. If he went to chef school, stands to reason. He's going to know how to cook it up, you know, sweet and thick.
Cook it up sweet and thick. God, man.
Yeah, that sounds sexual, man.
Oh, what a perv.
What do you mean, cook it up sweet and thick?
I'm talking about the slices of beef and everything.
All right, and finally, the Verizon Center, home to the Washington Wizards and the Washington Capitals. How many Verizon Centers are there, man? There must be like 50 of them.
Yeah, I've seen them. Yeah, I've heard of them.
D.C.'s Verizon Center is another venue where 100% of the food vendors garnered critical health violations. 10 of its stands were cited for preparing food amidst... Oh! Oh!
Told ya.
Oh, man.
I told ya.
What?
amidst rodent droppings.
Oh, man, are you kidding me? Rodent dropping?
I told you.
Amidst rodent droppings. The fact that only 25%... How can you have a brand new stadium? Let me ask you a question. How can you have a brand spanking new building and have rats? Rats are attracted by garbage. Rats are attracted by garbage. Now, how the hell can you have a brand spanking new building and have that kind of infestation? The fact that only 25% of vendors in National Park, the other downtown sports venue in our nation's capital, received critical health violations makes the Verizon Center, it makes their imperfect score that much more unpalatable. In fact, one would call it a national disgrace. National Park is the baseball. We got more bloody baseball stadiums. Don't tell me that we're broke. Don't tell me that we have funding this and problems that and we're being taxed to death. The American people have given the okay to building more crap can football and baseball and hockey stadiums. We did it. We greenlit that. We gave the green light to build asinine ballparks. You know, you go to a city like, here's a great example. You go to a city like Miami. They have two venues, one for the Panthers up in Broward, one for the Heat downtown. Why? Well, you know, one building isn't enough. They got to have two. It wouldn't be so bad if they could afford it, but they got the worst public schools in the history of man on this planet in Florida, second only probably to California. California at one time used to be one of the greatest states in the union when it came to public education. Forget it, man. Not now. But that doesn't stop us from building these asinine ballparks. I will say one thing about L.A. Nobody in this town is going to be voting on building any football stadium. And we got a lot of football fans here, a lot of them. But there ain't anybody around here dumb enough to give our money, our public money, to some jackass that wants to come in here with his football team and have the public build him a stadium. Isn't going to happen. They've been trying for the longest time to try to sell that crap downtown. They're trying to turn the Coliseum into something because they want to keep the stadium downtown. That's fine, man. You can put the stadium anywhere you want. I'll go if it was downtown, I'd go to it if it was downtown. But the public isn't going to put any money into it. So what you should do is you solicit private individuals. You want to build a stadium? Yeah, there's the Coliseum. That's what you work with.
Well, we'd rather... All right,
well, if you want to play in Los Angeles, that's it. If you want to build one in Dominguez Hills, you want to build one in Irwindale, you want to build one out in God knows where in Palmdale, be my guest, man, but you ain't getting any public money.
But what about if we build it at the Coliseum?
Great. Still ain't getting any public money.
Well, I mean, what are we...
Go ahead and refurbish the Coliseum. It's a beautiful venue. It's a beautiful stadium. People in Chicago did. Of course, the people in Chicago, I guess they spent public money. Ain't going to happen in Los Angeles. We don't need a football team that bad. And I miss football. I had season tickets to the Rams. I had a great time. I loved going to football. Every week I went to football. Every week we went down, we tailgated, we had our four seats, we had a ball. Had a great time. And there's no other way to watch football as far as I'm concerned. I like it on TV, but watching it at the stadium is so much fun. And even knowing that, there's no way in hell that I would ever vote to put public money into building a football stadium. Because you know what? Forget it. It's over, man. With schools the way we've got them, half the public services we got going to hell in a handcart. People talking about, what has the government ever done well? I think we got a few ballparks that answer that question. What's the government ever done that they haven't screwed? Hey, man, we wouldn't have 90% of the ballparks we got in this stinking country of ours wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for public money.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're still like being run by the ballpark, though.
Did I ever tell you that story? That's my favorite story in the world, okay? I don't even know what you just said, Robert.
I said it's still being run by the private team.
Well, it may be run by the private team. It may be run by the sponsors. There may be a lot of stuff, but it was built with public money. Okay? That's what I'm talking about. But let me... This was one of the greatest things that ever happened in my life. Just reading about this, I loved. What are you doing, Bud?
What about the Bud Dickman Report?
We're going to do it here. I just want to... All right, I'll say it later. Okay, it's time now for the Bud Dickman Report. The Bud Dickman Report this evening. Here is Bud Dickman. Bud, take it away.
Okay, Bud Dickman Report... Harry Reid is going to have a greenhouse gas and he had greenhouse gas, but he says it's gonna count as a global warming. And France is in a war that they declared on somebody. In another Bud Dickman report, 18 states and a district of Columbia are in a race. They're in a race to go to the top.
Now more news with Bud Dickman.
Jeb Bush says that he's searching for something. Jeb Bush, he said that he's searching. And he's searching and he's searching and he's still searching.
Now more news with Bud Dickman.
In a dragon tattoo, somebody had a tattoo of a dragon. And a bestseller book, too. So that's pretty good. You have a dragon tattoo and a book that is a bestseller.
Now more with Bud Dickman on the Bud Dickman Report.
And another news, GM is going to sell a flagship car. And it's called a flagship electric car, and they sold it. And another news, the BP, they're BP, man. Tom Hayward and Bob Dudley were hired by BP because it's a mess. So Bob Dudley and Tom Hayward. And Americans leaked something. They leaked something, and it'll be talked about later on, I guess. Then Jack Tatum died, which you heard about that. And a Grim Reaper has an attorney. He got an attorney.
And this has been the... Is that fun?
Yeah.
The Bud Dickman Report. I just wanted to ask a question here.
Yeah, me too.
What do you mean the Grim Reaper got an attorney?
Right here.
Grim Sleeper suspect gets new attorney. The man accused of being the notorious Grim Sleeper. That was the Grim Sleeper.
Well, yeah, but it's the Grim Reaper because he killed people.
I just thought that was really kind of cool. The Grim Reaper gets an attorney.
I don't know what I meant. What a Grim Reaper?
That's what they call death, man. All right, well, we had the Grim Reaper. Now we have the big-bellied rapist with a bizarre claim against the cops. He says that he was basically coerced to give a confession by being fed junk food, Twinkies, donuts, and the like. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, and another story.
Too late, man.
A plane crashed near at Ellen.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I don't know if there's money to be made. Phil Hendry Show, I'm talking to Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard about money to be made when it comes to global warming, okay?
Yeah, no, I know that you don't believe in it, and that's fine, okay? Well, do you?
I don't know, man. I don't know if I do or not. I don't think I do.
Okay, well, let's say we don't. Let's say all three of us don't.
All right.
If there's money to be made and a man, you know, start a business, going to make a car or say there was a car that could run on pee
What do you mean run on pee, man?
I'm just making something up. You know, would you invest in that?
You're saying if there was a car that ran on a fuel that was available anywhere?
Yeah.
I'd have to. I mean, if you could prove that, but... Here's the thing, man.
Oh, man, not if it ran on pee.
He's not saying pee. He's just saying a car.
I don't mean pee. I mean, it could be run on, like, what if you went to the bathroom in it?
Would you knock it off with that, man?
Well, I'm trying to get him to understand.
We don't need to, I don't want to, just ready-made fuel, right?
Okay.
Let me tell you about that. As long as I can remember, we've had cars that could run on, you know, I remember at Indy, the turbine car ran at the Indianapolis 500. And there was a controversy because the thing was running too fast. It could run on peanut oil or something like that. I might have been too young, and I might have gotten a story wrong. But I always wanted to know, what the hell happened to that? Why is that car gone? Peanut oil?
Well, man, that can't be.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I tend to agree with you. I tend to think, I don't tend to go to the conspiracy. A lot of people do. Well, you know, it got pushed out of the marketplace because it's peanut oil. It's going to drive all the oil industry people out of business. Well, naturally. Yeah, I know. Naturally. Sure. Yeah, naturally. But the fact is, they didn't, if they were so frightened of it, why would they allow it to run at the Indianapolis 500? Why would they allow it to have the publicity that it had? Why would they allow it to be talked about and to have prominent individuals in the racing business working on this new car? I have to conclude that it wasn't quite as efficient as they wanted us to believe, and that maybe it didn't always run on peanut oil. In other words, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, like it wasn't as bitching as everybody say it was.
Exactly. Exactly. I just can't, I just don't buy into that everything is a nefarious effort to squash the honest and brilliant work of the little guy who's come up with a way to save everybody billions of dollars, and the evil oil guy has come in and just put his thumbs right knuckle deep into the eyes of this guy. Because the publicity was there. People were fully aware of it. It ran at the most popular automobile race in America. And by God, if it was something that was valuable, people would have been up in arms. They would have wanted to know, well, what happened to this damn thing, and why isn't it still with us? So I have big questions, man. Anytime somebody says to me, gee, this was a great thing, but the oil company, well, you know, I'm sorry, man, it isn't that simple. The other thing is, because demand is demand, you cannot hold back the tide of demand. You cannot hold back the tide of a changing economy, changing taste of the consumer. It can't be done. You can do it for a little while. You can do it for a little while. You can't do it forever. Somebody is going to stick his nose out there, and he's going to, you know, risk getting it cut off by saying, I'm going to be the first guy, I'm going to market this, I'm going to push out there, I have the money, I have the marketing dollars, I got the promotional tools behind it, and I'm going to have this happen, and you just watch, and the day is going to come when suddenly, en masse, the consumer will have had a belly full of the rest of the stuff, and they're going to say, I'm going to buy what you got. It'll happen. It's just a matter of when. So I think that the model has not been refined. All right, final story here tonight. A serial rapist, and this is, we're not making light of this, folks, because that's a serious crime, but this guy has got a pretty bizarre story to tell. A serial rapist who pled guilty to multiple counts of rape, kidnapping, and robbery is trying to overturn his conviction by accusing interrogators of using junk food to coerce his fat ass into a confession. Bruce Tuck, also known as the big-bellied rapist, or as we like to call him around here, the fat ass on parade, filed a 10-page petition on his own behalf. Among other things, the 275-pound man said jailers fed him only lettuce. When they offered him chips and soda, he was quick to confess to 19 felony charges that led to a 60-year sentence. Tuck, who is locked up in the Wesley County Jail, said his guilty plea was involuntary on six grounds. Tuck said the year prior to the conviction, he was institutionalized with bipolar and suicidal tendencies and was not taking his medication at the time of his big fat-ass arrest. Tuck also said his confession was coerced. He claimed he was placed on a diet of lettuce only upon incarceration, and that Detective Marty Plunk offered him a bag of chips and a cold drink in exchange for talking about the case. Tuck called the search and seizure of his bedroom unconstitutional. He claimed...
The chip, the defense...
Yeah, it's the barbecue chip defense. Our show is produced by Jason Rantz, technical direction by Charles Wagon, and our associate producer is Dan Northcraft, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Check it out for your BSP.
Phil Hendry.